I'm Mark Schaefer.
And I'm Brad Brickerdahl.
We're two friends fascinated by all things Elvis.
Elvis Presley was more than a blue-eyed, handsome man. He was a complex character who remains one of the most beloved entertainment icons in the world.
Brad, is there anything that hasn't been said, that hasn't been seen, that hasn't been heard about Elvis Presley?
I know there's a lot, because we spend a lot of time talking about it.
We sure do, and we figured it was time to invite more people to the party.
If you share our burning love for the King of Rock and Roll, you came to the right place.
Welcome to Memphis Flash.
Well, Mark, things are getting exciting. So there's a lot of excitement in the Elvis world. The movie entitled Elvis is about to be released. The major release will be June 24th. I can't wait. And I know you and I are going to go together.
Right. I think it's got a buzz going. You know,
it's got a buzz. Yeah.
And I've had somebody today at work brought it up to me. They're not a fan like we are, you know, but they're like, yeah, that looks really good. I've been to a couple movies. I saw Mission Impossible and saw the trailer on the big screen, and man, it looks so, it's made for the big screen.
A teaser. Yeah.
It looks great. The lighting. Right. It's so accurate, like we've talked about. And yeah, I'm excited for it. My big goal is that it opens up the door for the market for this unseen Elvis, real Elvis stuff we haven't seen to be released.
And as you know, Elvis was a live performer. Imagine Elvis coming to your town to perform for one night. And imagine, hey, let's just say it's in Canada. Okay.
In Canada. Okay.
And then imagine pictures were taken of that show, and almost 60 years later, they're discovered.
No, that can't happen.
You don't think so? We're talking unseen photos. Yeah. It could happen.
I don't think that. Well, I don't know.
There could be a book published about it.
Well, I suppose if it could happen, there would be a book published. Because it did happen, right?
It did happen. We are very excited to have our guest, Paul Sweeney, on with us today.
He's from Ottawa, Canada. He, along with Jean-Marc Caris and Eric Lorenzen, put together terrific photo book. I don't know if you'd call it a coffee table book, but it's like a coffee table book with quite a bit of text. It's called Elvis Presley in Person, One Night in Toronto, April 2nd, 1957, the Maple Leaf Gardens. And Paul, we're so glad to have you on Memphis Flash.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being here.
We're excited to talk to you. This book is amazing. I've had the book for a few years now, and I put that with my favorite books, my Jerry Riff books and some of the other ones. So it's quite the book. It's packed. It's 352 pages and 300 unseen photos of Elvis in 1957.
Right. That's correct. Yeah. Back in 2016, when we stumbled upon, or Jean-Marc stumbled upon these photographs, and there's a whole story behind that. So
yeah, we'd love to hear that story, because the photographs are amazing. What are there, 345 total?
There's 345 total. About 300 had never been published before. And the reason there were so many pictures taken that day was Chatelaine, a ladies magazine in Canada at the time, sent June Callwood, who was an author and a reporter and a famous Canadian activist later in her life. They sent her to interview Elvis. And they also hired a gentleman by the name of John Siebert to go and take some photographs to put in the article. So they used about three or four of them in the magazine it came out in June of 57. And then John Siebert had a career through his whole life in Canada. And in 1998, he donated all of his negatives to the Library and Archives Canada. And Jean-Marc, who was a photographer for the Liberal Party of Canada, he was the official photographer for Pierre Trudeau, our current prime minister's father, and Jean Chrétien, who was, that's where we met. Jean-Marc and I sort of worked in different areas when Chrétien was prime minister, and that's how we met and became friends, and we had that Elvis connection. So he calls me up one day and says, Paul, you need to get down to Library and Archives Canada. I have something you are not going to believe. And he said, it's, you know, 300 photographs, 400 photographs. He said, I don't know how many are here of Elvis. And he says, I don't think these have seen the light of day. And so I think it's, I don't know, 25 minute ride. I probably got there in 15 minutes. I hightailed it down there, and he showed them all to me, and we're looking through the negatives. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, I said maybe 40 or 50 have seen over the years have been released. And he said, well, what should we do? I said, I think we need to do a book. And I said, I know a guy. It's weird to have a connect, you know, go from pictures taken in Toronto at the Library and Archives Canada in Ottawa, and you get someone in Norway to publish them. But that's Eric, as most of you know, is a big Elvis collector and a publisher of endless number of books over the last 20 or so years. And I knew him because I would help him out on his books with certain things, dating photographs and such. And so I called Eric up, or no, I emailed Eric and said, look, there's these photographs here. I think a book would be a good idea. And he says, he basically agreed. He says, yes, let's do it. We had just no idea. This was a year before the 60th anniversary of these shows. So we sort of made an agreement, and we told the lady, we said, look, we would like to, what do we do for copyright for these? She goes, oh, copyright's not an issue at all. You just have to pay for the photographs. She goes, how many of them do you want to use? And I said, all of them. And she was like, all of them? She goes, that's going to be a lot of money. And I said, just let us know how much it's going to be. And, you know, and anyways, we obviously got them, paid for them, for the right to use them, and then sort of worked, spent a whole year working full time, but I mean, full time job, and then trying to put this book together over the course of the following year to get it out in time for the anniversary of 2017, which was the 60th anniversary of the concerts.
The timing was perfect, wasn't it?
It was, and it wasn't something planned. Sometimes these things, it just sort of happen. I don't mean spur of the moment, but you know, sort of, we just, well, we've got a year to do this. And someone said, you're not going to get them done in a year. That's a big task to do in a year, but we managed to do it. So
if somebody's listening to the podcast right now and they're at a computer, is there a place, is there a website or something that they could go to while listening so they can see?
Yeah, Paul's Elvis page. If you just type in the Google bar, Paul's Elvis page, and it's something I've had for 30 some years. And I do a thing on there called Candid Central, and also Concert Photo of the Week and things like that. But you'll see in the Candid section, you'll see all of the pictures, not all, you'll see some of the Toronto pictures, not a lot of them, but you'll see all the pictures from Ottawa. The next day, Elvis came to Ottawa. And those are also in the book. There's only about 50 some odd pictures of Elvis that were taken that day, at least 50 that we've been able to get our hands on. But yeah, you can do that. And also if for ordering the book, people can just reach out to me. There's a link on Paul's Elvis page for that.
You're going to be in Memphis?
I'm going to be in Memphis, yeah, from the 9th to the 16th. But there's the Elvis Fan and Collector Show from the 11th to the 15th. And I will be at that with about the remaining 90 copies of the book I have.
So, oh, wow. There's just 90 left.
90 left, yeah.
Wow. Where's the event going to be?
It's at the Travel Lodge on, is it 1470 Eastbrook, I think, is the Travel Lodge near the airport.
Okay.
It's near Graceland, near the airport.
Yeah. East Brooks Road. Yeah.
Okay. East Brooks Road. That's the one.
This book is fascinating. These pictures, Elvis in 57, we know. He's a star by then. Everyone knows who Elvis is, right? I mean, he's rolling high. I mean, I think All Shook Up is number one at this time. And of course, I believe Loving You is out. This gold jacket, I was talking to Mark earlier about this. To me, that gold jacket, that look defines rock and roll, you know, in the 50s to me. And that jacket is just, or excuse me, the gold suit, I should say, is just as important to his look in the 70s. You know, Elvis wore the jumpsuits. And in the 50s, this really gives you that. This is the rock star right here, you know?
Yeah. The small little piece of trivia on that. This was the last time he wore the pants. Was the first show. There were two shows in Toronto, a 6 p.m. and a 9 p.m. show. The few pictures that have come from the 9 p.m. show, you'll see him with the gold jacket and black pants. And the next thing in Ottawa, same thing, gold jacket, black pants. The first show in Toronto was the last time, and he didn't wear it for very long, that suit. The pants. It only, I think, started that tour, and then he ended up with ditching the pants after the Toronto show because apparently he'd go down to his knees, and it was the flex and stuff, or I guess where the material was coming off.
It was getting worn.
Yeah, right.
The book, it's not just pictures of the concert, is it?
There's a press conference. Quite a few pictures from the press conference and the interview that was done. You'll see pictures of the June Caldwell with them. And there's also in between the two shows, there's some photographs there as well. And my favorite is, and I always have I think I mentioned to you guys before on page 218, I always have it open because that is actually when Jean-Marc showed me the pictures the first time. The press conference and talking to reporters and the on stage stuff, fantastic. But when I saw the first picture on page 218, I was like, whoa, that was just so unique to me. And just sitting there casually, you know, DJ is smoking a cigarette, Bill Black's leaning back on the chair, and they're just relaxing between the shows and goofing around, and there's trolleys underneath and they're pushing them around. You can see the people that work at the Maple Leaf Gardens, the ushers and stuff, stand there with their Maple Leaf sweaters and stuff on, just watching them do this and getting a kick out of it. And I just thought those were really unique photographs.
Was it kind of a race between him and...
Hoyt Hawkins were racing. Yeah, they were racing these trolleys. And the pictures, again, now when John Siebert shot, he shot with no artificial light. There's a couple, but mostly just natural light. And some of them, because they're racing, they're running so fast, they're actually a bit blurry, especially the one where the two of them are running. You can see them with these trolleys. And those handles that they're holding onto are pretty loose because you could pull them out. They were pretty precarious. And the fact that, they were running around there with those things, it just looks like they were having a ton of fun.
I think the colonel was kind of protective of that suit because they spent so much money on it. I wonder what the colonel would have said if he saw him.
And the one thing that a lot of people they said, oh, the colonel mustn't have gone to Canada because he, you know, didn't have a passport. Well, back then you didn't need a passport. You just had to show sometimes a piece of ID, a driver's license or any piece of ID. So he was with Elvis when he was in Toronto and Ottawa. And you can see him in the Ottawa pictures just at the base of the stage, just sort of crouched down. And then pictures with, you know, people, girls hugging his car and stuff.
The Cadillac that's there, I guess somebody was trying to hide the car, so no one knew that it was there or that he was there.
Yeah, they kept it same in Toronto and Ottawa. They kept it in an underground parking garage to sort of so that people couldn't see it because it had Tennessee plates and it was obvious, you know, I'm sure that.
Oh, they found out.
Yeah, they found out where it was. It's the same one with the hotel that he was at. Everyone found out what hotel he was staying at. And people were trying to get, you know, go see him at the hotel in Toronto and the hotel in Ottawa. And he also, I don't know if you guys are aware, he was supposed to go to Montreal the day after Ottawa. So it was going to be the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. But the Catholic Church kicked up such a stink in Montreal that they ended up not having the show. So a whole group of fans from Montreal took the train to Ottawa, which is closer than Toronto, so they could see the show. And there is a story in the book, Jean-Marc's cousin, who's from Ottawa, was talking about going to the show. And she was in a Catholic school, and one of the nuns said to her, is anybody going to the Elvis show? And she didn't realize, you know, this was going to lead to the burning of her ticket. She raised her hand. I'm going. And she happened to have her ticket with her. And then nun called her to the front of the classroom and took the ticket, put it in a bin and lit it on fire. And she never got to see him. She burned the ticket. So we have a little story about that in there. We talked to her. She was there when we released the book, and you know, and she loved the book. She just told, and she, when she told that story first, I said, we need to put that in the book. I said, that's crazy that happened, but you know, we need to let people know.
It shows how controversial he was at the time. And wow, that's quite a story. Another neat thing that you did with this book is you kind of interweaved actual newspaper stories of the time to help tell the story. So you're reading it in its time and not with benefit of hindsight or whatever. It's really
is interesting how they, because I edited all those, I mean, just for cleaning up grammar and punctuation and stuff, but both those articles are as they were written. But reading those, it's kind of interesting how they perceived Elvis, how they thought about him and how they looked towards him. And it's interesting to read them now, because it seems so controversial then, but to us now it's like, well, no, that's nothing. What's going on here? But yeah, back then it was like it was the end of the world, some of the stuff he was doing, you know.
It also shows kind of like his innocence. There's some, when he's being interviewed, someone asks what his range was, and Elvis didn't know what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. Your vocal. So they meant his vocal range, and he said, I don't know anything about music. I just think that's great, you know.
Yeah. And when you read the interview that June Caldwell did with him too, it wasn't like, I don't know if she was trying to one up him or trying to make him look bad, but I think she was asking him some pretty tough questions, not like the normal questions. How many cars do you have? What's your favorite song? How many teddy bears do you, you know, all that stuff that people would ask over the years. And it was a pretty tough interview and an article that was not like anything that was written previously. It was very I think, ahead of its time in how she sort of looked at Elvis and tried to make sense of the whole phenomenon of Elvis Presley in 1957. The other thing that we did when we were putting the book together, there was a gentleman in Ottawa, Gord Atkinson, who was the DJ, and he was still alive. He was 89 at the time. And I went out to his house and interviewed him. And that full interview is in the book. I recorded it and we transcribed it. But it was interesting to talk to someone who was actually there. And he interviewed him as well. So did the DJs in Toronto, you know, backstage. There were some that were released over the years. It's nice to have all the photographs from that day, sort of, and, you know, and put them in sequence, and but also put in magazine and newspaper articles to tie the whole story together. And there's one we put in, I think, a full color near the end of the, mm-hmm. the front page of one of the Toronto papers.
Were the photographs in good condition, or the negatives, or what did you work from?
They produced TIFF files for us from the original negative. So was there, and the original negative, some of them were in good shape, some of them were not in good shape. So there was some work that we had to do on them, a fair bit of work. And that was Eric and his team did that. They did the work in cleaning them up. Jean-Marc also contributed, made comments and made suggestions, because as a professional photographer with lighting and stuff and making sure that you don't make it look too grainy or take away the historical context of the photographs. And some of them may be a little dark, but that's how they were shot. You could brighten them up and try to make it, oh, let's see if we can see Elvis a little bit better in that picture, but that's not how it was taken. Mm-hmm. So you would change the actual look of the photograph if you did that.
Reading the part about John Siebert, that was calculated, right? That he wouldn't use a flash because he didn't want to draw attention to himself. So the candid moments are very candid.
Exactly. Yeah. He didn't want to be boom with the flash and then the band or someone would turn around. And a lot of time he was sort of, you can see some of the pictures, he was sort of at the side of the stage and the back of the stage, and which had a kind of a unique perspective for some of these photographs. There's one that was where it's sort of Elvis is just turning around and looking at him. And it's a classic photograph, a great photograph.
I know which one you're saying. That's a
great shot. Yeah.
When Mark and I started this podcast, it was about discovering new Elvis items, pictures, or things, or the things that aren't out there that no one's seen. And you are proof that there is stuff out there, and you've found it, and you've published it. I mean, how does that feel?
It felt great. I mean, I never thought that this would happen. You know, I had no intentions. I'm a huge fan. Been a fan since I was 15 years old. When That's the Way It Is. I was babysitting. This is in the summer of 75, May 1975, babysitting. That's the Way It Is comes on TV. And I'm like, holy sh! This is pretty amazing. I got to record. So I get my little tape recording. Oh, wow. My father had Elvis albums and stuff, but this is when I first actually saw him perform. And I thought, oh my God, this man's amazing. And even then I was 13 years old. I thought the charisma came across, but I never thought we would ever do a book or put a book in. I mean, I help people out with things and stuff and dating photographs and stuff, but to do a book, it really feels good when it's done. But you guys know the Elvis world. Sometimes you think, am I going to get trashed? I was like, how's the reviews going to be?
Right.
And I don't know, you're familiar with Elvis, the Man, His Music, the publication in the UK. Trevor takes care of that magazine. And I've never met Trevor, but he loved the book and gave it a great review, which was just a sense of relief. But I knew it was good, but you just don't know, right?
And you have that validation.
Yeah, so that really helped a lot. And other people too reached out to us, and we did a thing with the mayor of Ottawa and with putting the book out. We had Elvis Presley Day and presented a copy there. I also went to Toronto. I made arrangements. It took a bit of work because my son was in university there, but I made arrangements and met the mayor of the city and gave the city of Toronto a copy of the book. It's a good feeling to be able to put something out that is well received.
Don't go away. There's more Memphis Flash coming up. Well, Brad, I know you like to shop like a king and dress like a rock star.
I sure do, Mark. And when I do, I go to Lansky Brothers Clothing at the historic Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee.
They've had an iconic style since 1946.
This is where Elvis Presley shot, Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, and the list goes on.
Boy, it goes on today. There's rock stars still shopping there. Brad, you don't have to be a rock star to shop at Lansky's. You'll look like one if you do. But
yes, you will.
The clothes are so great. I don't dress real flashy. And I've gotten quite a few things, even shoes at Lansky's. My wife and I would like to go to Lansky's in the Peabody, and then we like to go get a drink and sit there in the atrium and people watch. That's a nice outing.
It is. I mean, and those shoes you have, do they happen to be blue and suede by chance?
They are. They are blue suede shoes. from Mr. Lansky. You know, I bought a winter coat there, a light jacket, even handkerchiefs, and they've got that cologne, Linnell cologne.
They do. I've had that. It's gone. I went through a bottle in about a year. But hey, the cologne's
that's what Elvis
tough.
Wore.
That's and what Elvis wore, man.
And you got to. Lansky's, and you can too. It's a cool place to go.
It sure is, Mark. Make sure if you're in Memphis, you go to Lansky Brothers at the Peabody Hotel on Union Avenue. If you're not, go to www.lanskybrothers.com. Shop like a king, dress like a rock star, iconic style since 1946.
And now, back to the show.
Paul, there's an Elvis movie coming out soon. Are you excited about it?
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I was, you know, you're always leery when these things, when they talk about them. But when I saw the first trailer, the attention to detail, I thought, wow, they've nailed this. I mean, just the clothes, the venue, just everything looked so well done. And everything I've seen since just reaffirms that. So
do you think Ottawa will be portrayed in this movie, that concert?
I don't think they're going to mention anything about Ottawa or Toronto, though they are doing a premiere in Toronto. So Butler and the actress who plays Priscilla and Baz Luhrmann are going to be in Toronto for a Canadian premiere.
I was going to ask you, through your research for the book, did you come across any audio from 1957 other than the little snippets we've heard?
Everyone has asked that question. And I said, oh, to only be able to release a CD of the Toronto show or the Ottawa show with this book would have been amazing. But no, there's one that recently, it's longer than anything we've seen, but not and more of Elvis, was the CBC archives. There was a video I posted on Facebook, and that has the longest bit of footage we've ever seen. And that only came out maybe a month or so ago, but a lot of it is shows the fans and the fans from Montreal on the train coming to the show. But you see more of when he's introduced, and it's all Ottawa, it's not Toronto. And people say, oh no, it's Toronto. Well, you can, the Toronto apron was solid and the Ottawa apron had stripes on it, so that's how you can tell what's where he, the venue for that show. And there is more of the introduction by the DJ Gord Atkinson and a bit more of Elvis performing, but it's, you know, a couple of minutes.
Paul, it was great to have you as our guest. And we know that you will be in Memphis.
Let's tell the listeners again where you'll be with the book.
Well, I'll be at the Elvis Fan and Collector Show, which runs from August 11th to the 15th. And that's at the Travel Lodge Hotel on East Brooks Road in Memphis. I believe it's 1470 or 1471.
Which is really right down the road from Graceland.
It is. It's a couple of miles from Graceland, a couple of miles from the airport. And we're there from 11 to 6 each day, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. each day. So come and see me and buy a book and I'll sign it for you. And then I won't have to cart them all back in my car back to Canada.
You have 90 books left. So if they
90 books out of 1,000. Yeah.
That's not that many left. So
no.
Brad and I can recommend this book. It's really great.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Paul. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you later. Take it easy.
Thanks, Paul.
Well, Mark, having Paul on as a guest was great. As you know, we strive to find new things that people haven't seen Elvis related or heard. And definitely a lot of these pictures people haven't seen until 2017 when the book came out.
Yeah. And, you know, you think 300 new pictures of Elvis in his prime. If I were to pick a year to see Elvis live, 57 would be right up there.
Oh, it would have been hot, man.
It would have. And I wonder what One Night With You sounded like, if you could hear it live.
See, I'm curious because I don't think you could hear a lot of that stuff. And, you know, it's funny because I was lucky enough to work with DJ Fontana a couple times. He tells this funny joke, and a lot of you Elvis folks have probably heard it before. It's not a joke, it's actually the truth. But he said back then when we couldn't hear, you know, we were led by his movements. And I said, we were the only band led by an ass. That's what he said. Yeah. I'll never forget DJ saying that, you know. But he was referring to the crowd screams and everything. And
yeah, they knew Elvis's
every move, every
projecting
move.
A song, yeah.
Well, Mark, now it's time to open up the Memphis Flash mailbag. I met a really interesting fella at one of my shows on Beale Street. His name is Jim. He's from California. He had left and he was with a buddy. And the bartender said, this guy that left, he's seen Elvis 19 times. I'm like, wow. I go, was he coming back? And he said, yeah. And they asked if there was one song he wanted to hear, what would it be? So we were going to surprise him. And his buddy said it would be If I Can Dream. So we did it. We played it for him. And then we got to talking, and now we're corresponding back and forth in emails. And he listened to our podcast and everything. And he's got a great story when he first got into Elvis and saw him. So I'm going to read you his letter, if you don't mind.
Let's hear it.
And this is from Jim from California, Southern California. November 14th, 1970, I was coerced to go see Elvis Presley at the Forum just outside Los Angeles. My ex-girlfriend had asked me a few months passed while we were still dating, but we had broken up since then. I thank the good Lord for her not being able to find someone else to go. I really didn't know much about Elvis at the time. She convinced me to go, and I reluctantly agreed. This concert was Elvis's first LA live performance in 13 years. The day of the concert was just 3 days after the release of That's the Way It Is, the album. That day changed my life forever. I was 18 years old and was a senior in high school. I was familiar with the first few songs, which I had heard on the radio growing up. By the third song, I was tapping my foot to the beat and thinking, this guy is good. The long version of Suspicious Minds sealed the deal for me becoming an Elvis fan. The songs like I Just Can't Help Believin', You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, and I've Lost You were more recent Elvis songs, which I had never heard before. The live orchestra had a major part in these songs. Elvis was powerful, but the orchestra made him more so. Something I have never read about is Elvis's ability to change the arrangement of a song to maximize his style. His stage presence doing these songs was captivating. After the show, I was so impressed, and I knew I had a desire to learn as much as I could about Elvis Presley. Since there was no internet, I began purchasing records at the local record store and ordering from a music club I was a member of. I wanted to listen to every Elvis record that had ever been recorded. I had begun to appreciate his early years. His ability to sing high notes in addition to his great range was incredible. I liked the way he would drag out and almost slur certain words was obviously his unique style. I don't remember how I found out Elvis was going to be in Las Vegas just 3 months later, but I was determined to go. Las Vegas was less than a five-hour drive. I mentioned to my dad I wanted to see Elvis in Las Vegas. A few days later, my dad said for me to contact Mr. Kincaid, who was a pit boss at the International Hotel, where Elvis was performing. He said Mr. Kincaid would make sure we got into the show. For my 19th birthday, my dad would pay for my room at the International. That February 1971, my buddy and I took off to Las Vegas. Once we got just a few miles outside of Las Vegas, we started seeing billboards advertising Elvis in Las Vegas at the International Hotel. I was already excited, but when we saw the billboards, our excitement began to intensify. When we pulled into the parking lot, the marquee had one name on it, which of course, read Elvis. At that moment, I realized how powerful his first name was. Saying Elvis was just as powerful as saying Elvis Presley. Keep in mind, I was a new fan and still learning. As we entered the hotel, the Elvis signs advertising the show were everywhere. We immediately seeked out the casino and looked for the pit boss area. Mr. Kincaid came over to shake my hand and said, "Welcome to Las Vegas." The show we were to see was the dinner show at 9 p.m. that night. Mr. Kincaid gave me a red slip to get into the invited guest line. That's a big deal because the regular guest line started lining up over 3 hours before each show. You needed a ticket for that line, but your seat would be determined by how much you tipped the maitre d'. Mr. Kincaid told us to get in line about 20 to 30 minutes before 9 p.m. He wanted us to experience the ambience of the showroom before an Elvis show. We got there at 8:30, and it took us 5 minutes to meet Emilio, the maitre d'. After Emilio welcomed us to the Elvis Presley show, I handed him the red slip Mr. Kincaid gave me. He looked at the seating chart and then handed the red slip to an usher and asked him to take these gentlemen down to seats. We had no idea where those seats were. At this point, when you were following an usher, you want him to walk toward the stage. The door to the showroom was in the back. As we followed the usher, we got about halfway to the stage. I turned around to my friend who was walking behind me and gave him a big smile, knowing we were going to be at least in the front half of the showroom. Huh. We continued to walk closer to the stage. I couldn't believe it, but we reached the long, long tables next to the stage. He told my friend to go on one side while I was on the other side. Our seats were seat three on each side of the table from the stage. I almost could touch the stage. I was so excited because I was going to see Elvis up close, not like in the back of the Forum where I could barely see 90 days prior. The curtain at the most of the Las Vegas shows usually came up a few minutes late. The intermission between Sammy Shore and Elvis was only 15 minutes. The moment was finally here. The music of 2001 started. The curtain was still down. The tension was building. What a great intro song. The curtain opened and Elvis walked out on stage. The orchestra, the Imperials, Kathy Westmoreland, and the Sweet Inspirations were already seated along with Charlie Hodge, James Burton, Jerry Sheff, Glenn Wilkinson, and Ronnie Tutt. As the start of That's Right Mama begins, Charlie hands Elvis his guitar, and the place is still clapping since the first moments Elvis walks onto the stage. One standing ovation after the other, another until Can't Help Falling in Love started. I did not realize that this was his song usually to the end of the show. I liked the song, but also hated it because it was the song that ended 18 of the 19 Elvis shows that I saw him live in person. I was blown away when the curtain came down while trying to digest what I had just seen. As we were exiting the showroom, all I could think of what an unbelievable show I had just witnessed. We immediately headed to find Mr. Kincaid. The show was comped by him, which we did not expect. We had to thank him. He saw us coming and walked towards us. He asked us how we liked the show, even though we were grinning ear to ear. The happiness on our faces was evident, and we could not thank him enough. As we were ready to say goodbye to Mr. Kincaid, he asked us one more question. Do you guys want to come to the midnight show? We almost fainted. That's Jim's account of seeing Elvis live. I mean, wow. Listen, 1971, and he remembers it like that.
Yeah, like it was yesterday. That's a well-written account.
Really is.
Mr. Kincaid intrigues me.
We need to find out a little more about Mr. Kincaid, see if he's still around.
And how his dad knew to go to him, or how that worked.
Yeah, because I guess this was a birthday present from his dad. And so his dad pulled some strings and got those tickets comped. So
wow.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, what an experience. Holy cow.
And remember, he saw him 19 times. So that was the first, or I guess that was the second show, excuse me. First Vegas show that he saw. And to all of our listeners out there, if you've got an Elvis story, please share it with us.
There are thousands of stories, you know.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Probably millions.
There's billions of stories, Mark.
Billions and billions, yes.
Billions. And now it's time for a segment we like to call, Did You Hear That? Elvis's recording of Way Down, Mark. You're familiar with it, yes?
Yes, sir.
1976, recorded at?
The Jungle Room.
Way Down, I've heard the song a million times. We've heard all these Elvis songs a million times. Today I was listening to Way Down, and right at about 1:58, you hear Elvis hum very quietly, like he's trying to find the note for the last verse. Mm-hmm. So I think he's just trying to make sure he's on, and you can barely mm-hmm. hear him do it. Yeah. And that's what I want you to hear. It'll be on our social media page. It's Elvis just with the slightest little hum, kind of off mic, and then he goes into the very last verse. It's really, I think it's pretty cool, you know.
I've heard that, and I guess I thought that he was maybe coming in too early and caught himself, but you're the musician. You know,
I never thought of it. That could be it too. You know, I really never thought of that but it just seems so quiet, like it's off mic kind of. He hums like a couple times. You hear he's, whether he's finding the note or maybe coming in early, you know, it just worked up the song. Obviously the version that you're going to hear, you hear that, but there is a version I think on Cleaned Up, the Moody Blue album, maybe it was a reissue. You don't hear it. I think they took it out.
Oh, they took it out?
Yeah, because I was trying to find it there and I couldn't hear it there, but I heard it on this one. So
he kind of did that in Burning Love, didn't he? Wasn't he kind of?
I think he kind of was, yeah.
So maybe he was just trying to keep that note, as you say. So
yeah,
interesting.
Way Down, ladies and gentlemen.
I like the outtakes of Way Down. James Burton's guitar has kind of a fuzzy sound that it does.
It's distorted, yeah, which you didn't hear a lot of James doing that. It was really clean, very clean, you know, chicken picking and all that, you know.
Right. But yeah, it's got really great licks. If you like that sort of thing, check out the outtakes.
Well, Mark, I had a great time today with our guest. This is episode 9, and we're going to keep this baby going.
You bet. And if you have 300 unseen Elvis pictures, let Brad and I know.
Or 301, whatever you got.
Or 354 or whatever. So, well, maybe we could do a book, Brad.
Mark, maybe we could.
You've got a computer, don't you?
I've got a couple.
And a scanner?
I think so.
Okay. And if you're listening and you want to contact Brad or myself, just email us at memphisflashpodcast@gmail.com.
Check out our social media pages where we will have some of these pictures posted and video clips that we discussed. Mark, I had a great time with you.
I did too. Thank Paul Sweeney again, and I look forward to our next show.
Right, and I'm going to see you soon down here in Memphis.
Yep, we'll be loading up the car and coming down.
So until then, we'll catch you on the flip side.
Memphis Flash is written and produced by Brad Burkadahl, Mark Schaefer, and Anna Burkadahl. Original music written and performed by Brad Burkadahl. Don't forget to visit Memphis Flash Podcast on Facebook and Instagram for special content related to this and other episodes. Have a topic you'd like us to cover or just want to say hi? Email us at memphisflashpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.